serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, observing Memorial Day weekend by reflecting on veterans who have left us since this time last year. On January 8th, we lost George Poplin. When he shared his story here 5 months earlier, it generated quite a response from people who had taken his high school typing class. They marveled at how well he typed when they learned how severely injured his hands were while serving with the 2nd Infantry Division in Europe.
On Christmas Eve, I went to the chaplain's service, and I promised the Lord that if I got home, I'd serve him the rest of my life. That took a while for that to catch on, but I finally caught on after I got home. When I got hit, I had on 2 overcoats and heavy gloves.
That was your standard?
It was that day. It's cold. I'd been on guard duty, and it was extra cold. And that shrapnel went right through there, half-inch layer, just took out bone and everything, nerves. And then on this other arm, it went through, took out the bone. So I had to have a bone graft, and it's broken.
So we understand. This was in the morning? When this happened? And you and one other guy are standing next to each other?
Well, we're walking down to the Jeep with Mormite can in each hand.
Uh-huh.
That's what they brought the food in. Kept the food hot.
Right.
And it knocked me down.
Where did it hit in relation to where the two of you were?
It must have hit just in between us. We were not close together because you didn't dare do that. But as I went down, I lost my helmet down into a ditch. And I said to a couple of guys that were there, not ours, I didn't know them. Mm-hmm. I said, would you get my helmet for me? I lost it off in the ditch. And I was bleeding, of course, down the sleeves. And they said, you don't need a helmet. You need to get back to the aid station. They hailed a Jeep and got me back to the aid station.
What do you think would have happened to you if they didn't?
No telling. I'd have bled to death, probably.
Instead, he went on to touch the lives of so, so many, including yours truly. That was George Poplin. The same week that he passed away, we also lost one of the WASPs from World War II. When I asked Doris Wanty what she was most proud of, her time as a women's Air Force service pilot rolled instantly off her tongue.
The wings I got when I graduated.
You still have them?
Yes, I do.
Did you feel like you were doing something important for your country?
No. Not at the time, I didn't.
You feel that way now?
Yeah, they've told us that so many times that you feel like maybe you were doing something important.
You finally believe them?
I don't know if I believe them. It was a good feeling to be a graduate of the WASP. I liked it very much. I like flying. Nothing else compares to it, and it's a wonderful feeling.
A feeling we trust has been met and exceeded for Doris since her passing in January. When we heard Doris's story, we also introduced you to her husband, Mike, who left us a month after Doris. Mike served on the destroyer USS Lardner. Are there some times that you look back on when you were on the Lardner and you remember what happened and you can picture it in your mind and you ask yourself, how did I survive that? Or maybe say, well, hey, I was pretty fortunate to survive that.
There is one, and I don't like to talk about it. And if I do tell you, I may crack in talking about it, but I'll tell you, it happened at Christmas time. This is why I hate Christmas.
Still today, 70 years later, you hate Christmas.
In a way, I don't know if I can tell you or not. Hmm. It happened at Bougainville. We helped the Marines go ashore, and then the bodies started coming back, and they would come back in baskets. And one of the, you shouldn't have done this. This boy, they put on the wardroom table. He had no arms, no legs, and he was burned over most of his body. And all we could do was give him morphine, and he wanted to hear White Christmas. All the time, it was a record. It would play over and over and over and over. And it took us about 10 hours, I guess, to get to a forward hospital on Vella La Vella. And the doctor said to me, he says, I won't let him die, Mike. I'll get him ashore. And he did, but he died once he got there. But he didn't die on the ship. I've always felt bad. I never got his name. or his father and mother. I've always wanted to write to her. He was about 17, Marine, nice young guy.
It's okay. I'm sorry, Mike.
You don't realize. I happens if I ever think about it, and at Christmas time, it's double. They keep playing White Christmas. I've gotten used to it. But to talk about it's different.
But over the years, if you're somewhere and White Christmas comes
you
on...
You never can forget it.
Another reminder of the price of freedom we observe this Memorial Day. Francis Asbury knew all about that. His older brother Leon was a P-47 pilot shot down and killed in action on his 129th mission in Europe. For the younger brother, a flight in a war-weary Navy B-24 on December 19, 1944 nearly ended his life.
Well, we were out probably a little over 300 miles from Hawaii. The number one engine caught on fire, and we're going to have to go down. And I'll tell you a story, and you can... I had a real good buddy on there, and when we found out we were going to go down, we all had life jackets. And he came up to the flight deck, and he said he didn't have one. I mean, we didn't have a spare. We looked around and couldn't find another one, and later on we did. And instead of staying at the radio... I had my second radioman get on, and I took the life jacket back to him in the back, and I was standing up when the plane hit. So I have no idea how I got out. I must have gone out head first.
So you have no idea how you made it from inside the tail of that plane to the water?
No idea.
Where were you when you came to?
I was in the water, and I saw the life raft, and Red was in it, and I was able to manipulate and get close enough, or he was getting close enough to me, to where he could pull me in.
Wow.
Actually, really being hurt, I was the only one on the plane that was hurt. I'll take that back. We lost 8 guys out of 15.
Oh, you had 15 that day?
Yeah. We had 4 guys that went over aboard ship, and they had not had in their 4 hours of flight pay. You got to fly 4 hours a month in order to earn flight pay. So they went up in order to get 4 hours.
Oh.
Yeah, 3 of them went down with the plane.
Uh-huh.
And one of them got out.
So of the 15 on board, 8 are killed. And you come to, you're floating in the water. I mean, if you had taken longer to come to, you might not be here, huh? You had a life jacket that was keeping you afloat?
I had a life jacket on.
I mean, did you even know what had happened or who you were or where you were?
Oh, yeah. I knew what was going on, and I knew we were down and that we were in trouble.
So you see Red in the raft, and you're able to kind of paddle your way over?
Mm-hmm.
But you're hurt. You can already feel that there are some injuries.
Oh, yeah. I've got my face smashed in. I can't see out of my right eye. I've got a broken arm, compound fracture of this arm, and I lost a lot of teeth.
Lost a lot of blood, I bet.
Probably, yeah. Lost a lot of blood, but mainly it was my face. And this compound fracture of this bone and this bone here to where?
Around your eye, the orbital bone?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
So my eyes sunk down, but there's compound fracture of both of them. And my nose, my upper jaw was shattered, my lower jaw was shattered.
So basically, your face looks like it got sledgehammered.
Yeah.
Could you feel all that pain, or were you kind of numb to some of it?
Actually, I wasn't numb, really. The only thing that hurt was my arm. Anytime I moved it or anybody touched it, it hurt. As far as my face and all these bones that were broken in there, I had no pain.
Wow.
It's amazing.
So you get to the raft, and Red helps you into it?
Oh, yeah.
And can you see anybody else?
See the other guys hanging on the side.
Of the raft?
There were always 3 of us in the raft. I was in the middle and one on each end. It was only a 2-man life raft, really.
But they put you in the middle because you were the most severely injured.
Yeah. The other guys hung on the side.
Uh-huh.
And then they all took turns switching around over a couple of days.
And what time of day was it when you crashed?
Very nice day.
What? Middle of the day, like afternoon or something?
I would say very early afternoon.
Uh-huh.
Right afternoon.
I imagine you had some perspective on this, because you've already done a whole tour in the Pacific flying these patrols where you're looking for enemy ships and you're looking for submarines, and I imagine occasionally you were looking for downed American airplanes, right?
Yes.
Now you guys are a downed American airplane.
You're right.
So you're dependent on someone who had been doing what you were doing to find you.
Hopefully.
Well, and how that's my question. How much hope did you have? Knowing what you'd seen and what you were familiar with, did you think you guys would get picked up?
Absolutely not. When you're 300 miles from land in a two-man life raft, three-man life raft, you don't expect to get picked up. You're just lucky when you get spotted.
And he was blessed to live another 74 years until his passing in January of this year. 2 months later, we lost a vet I had the privilege of growing quite close to after first interviewing him in 2011. Richard Christensen was a Purple Heart recipient who went on to become a pastor and a longtime VA chaplain.
One of the frequent verses of scripture that was quoted was from Psalm 91, where it says, "He shall give his angels charge over you." I received such a letter from a very good and godly lady in our church the same day that I heard that my cousin and one of my close friends had been killed in action. My cousin at St. Lo and the other friend, John Friesma, he always loved cars. He was a farmer, but he loved cars and tractors and everything. And he was a tank person when he was over there, and he was killed just about the time that I was facing my own problems. So at that point, you read that scripture, and you realize that there's a reality for yourself, but there's also the fact that some people are going to die, and the Lord knows the path for each of us. And I think you learn in moments like that that we don't know everything. Mm-hmm. So many, many things are in the counsels of God and nowhere else.
It sounds like maybe you're 20 years old, so I'm not going to put words in your mouth and tell you you were ready to go at that point, but it sounds like it gave you some peace that you weren't in control, but somebody was.
Yeah, I think that's true. You pray every day. You pray when you're going through the ordeal. But you have to find a way of dealing with reality and knowing that even as you pray, you may die. Mm-hmm. I had that experience when myself and a man named Lieutenant Posner, 22-year-old graduate of the University of Kansas, he had come in as a replacement, and I was with him on, I think, the second battle that he entered, and he and I went up in the second story of a house. An artillery shell from German hit in a tree outside the house there, and just one shard of shrapnel went straight through his heart, and he was gone. And you realize in a moment like that every moment of the day when you're in combat could be your last.
Dick Christensen took his last breath on March 22nd, eulogized beautifully by his adopted son, Clyde, a longtime NFL assistant coach. In April, we lost Eddie Fail, who had been assumed dead more than once during World War II, including when he spent 2 weeks stranded on a tiny Pacific island after having to crash land his TBF Avenger.
Well, we had a routine to leave, take the raft out, put it on the beach every night to collect the water. Incidentally, that's drinking water coming out of life raft stinks.
A little rubbery plastic?
Yeah. But anyway, one particular morning, we went out to pick up the life raft, and we see a plane coming straight at us. I forgot what kind of a plane it was, but from the front, that thing looked like a Zero. And we all scrambled back for cover, and as it comes up, we see the star. We rush out and we and so he sent the ward out, and the USS Gamble picked us up.
Something tells me if you were gone that long that the members of your squadron might have suspected that you had died.
No, I was reported dead. And I still think that's why I got the Navy Cross.
Well, it was a little more than that. The Navy mentioned his courageous fighting spirit and fearless devotion to duty maintained with utter disregard for his own personal safety. That's from his citation for the Navy Cross, a decoration exceeded only by the Medal of Honor. Eddie Fail died April 6th and will be buried at Arlington National Cemetery. Also last month, the community of South Bend, Indiana was stunned to learn of the passing of Paul Davis because he had been so active in giving back to his hometown even well into his 90s. When he shared his story on Hometown Heroes, he recalled liberating a concentration camp in Europe.
We didn't realize it was near as bad as what it was until we did liberate that one camp.
Yeah.
And boy, when we let them people go free, they were running.
If they could, if they were able, and a lot of them weren't.
Right.
And you just showed me some photos that you took there.
Yes, with my little brownie box camera.
Brownie box camera. And I'm not trying to be melodramatic, but this is the truth. You told me as you were showing me those pictures that your children have never seen them.
Right.
It's more than 70 years ago.
You never have seen them, dude. It's easy to want to look at them tonight.
Well, and I don't blame anyone for not wanting to look. But there was a reason that you took them.
Right. I never thought anything like that could happen to a human being. And it was terrible to have to see that.
So many lives to remember this Memorial Day. That was Paul Davis. And I have two more men to recognize before we run out of time here. On May 3rd, Bob Barney finished his journey at the age of 98. The upcoming 74th anniversary of D-Day will be the first time since that longest day that this paratrooper won't be here to tell us what it felt like to jump behind enemy lines in the pre-dawn hours of June 6th, 1944. And I was dumb enough to ask Bob if he was scared.
Oh, boy. Yes, huh. I was scared. And I didn't get scared until after I hit the ground. It's a lonely world out there.
I would imagine it could be a little overwhelming.
Yeah, but being at, I think, the average individual at Yankee Ingenuity, you had a job that you were supposed to do, and it was over there somewhere, so you start headed for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it worked out.
Well, when you think back on all of it, all those days that you endured as a paratrooper, certainly those bitterly cold days at the Battle of the Bulge, when you think back on all of it, what are you most thankful for and what are you most proud of?
Surviving. You know, you look at that's a part of it. You think about what took place, all these guys that made it home like I did, that was an accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
We survived.
Bob Barney was certainly a survivor and an inspiration to anyone who had the privilege of knowing him. And you can say the same for Leo Weil, who passed away on VE Day, May 8th. He had survived some close calls during the invasion of North Africa and served as a crew chief for P-40 Warhawks with the 33rd Fighter Group.
The first time I was really hit by something is when my pilot was killed. That I couldn't take. He was up with other planes. And when he came back, there were ME-109s above. Our planes were in the sun, and they didn't see him, and they lost him. He was shot down, I was told, and he used his parachute. He was killed coming down in the parachute, and I felt terrible. I wouldn't get out of that place I was sleeping in for a couple of days.
I don't imagine you were keeping count, but you just heard from 15 different World War II veterans who left us since last Memorial Day. The words they left us with, those haunting memories, underscore what Memorial Day is all about. Counting up the cost, measuring the price of freedom, and then doing everything we can to make sure it was not paid in vain. So that's where we'll finish today. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll remember on Memorial Day and every day that freedom is not free.